Okay, today's daf is daf mem gimel. Boy mine, we're down to 1/5 of the way down. Boy mine, Rabbi Avinam Reb Sheshes. We've discussed the relationship of what it is that the brothers, the survivors of the father, are able to get when the father dies in cases of Rosh Hashanah, cases of Knas. So where you have Momen, that the father was due to the father, so then he's able to be merged to his children. When you have a knas, he can't be merged to his children. According to Rabbi Shimon, even a knas that was turned into moment by Bezdin, he can't be merged to his children. He actually has to be gova, the knas, in order to be merged to his children. But certainly the rights to something, he can't, the rights to something in his daughter, he can't give over to his children. Asks Ravina from Rabbi Sheshes, how about a bat who is nizonet min ha'achim? We know, we'll see later on, that there is one of the hidden tna'im of the ketuvah, much more to a ketuvah than appears in the written shtar. One of the hidden tna'im of the ketuvah, which is all part of Bezdin's takana, is that he agrees that the sons that he has are going to have to pay to support the daughters until they get married. And that is something that they have no choice about. Now, my question is, Esther of Avina, but in that case, would there have been a takana to give her salary over to the sons in the same way that her salary goes to the father? Do we say, in this case, what happens is basically that the father's place is now filled by the brothers. So just like when the father gave her a salary, he was also zochet, the father gave her a parnosa, he was zochet her salary. So when the sons give her a parnosa, they too are zochet her salary. So do we say, Mahatam Asaya Deala Av, Achinani Maaseya Deala Achim, Odilma Lo Dami La'av, or maybe it's not the same at all, because Hatam Midide Mitzana, where she's now becoming the, her bizonot comes from the father, it's his own money. He's not forced to do that. Mashenkin over here, Hocha Lav Mididu Mitzana, she's not being paid from their mother money, she's being basically supported by a Tanai of the Ketuvah of her mother, which is not up to them to call. This is part of the Shibut that's on the estate. What's the din? Omar Lay, so he said, well, I don't know, it's not a preferred Mishnah. It says, Amanan nizonet minechsei yitomim umaasei adeh shalahem. It says over here, a guy dies. Another one of the hidden ketubah is that as long as the widow of this ketubah is going to remain in the house, not marry somebody else, or not be toveya her ketubah to leave, part of the tenaya of the ketuvah is as long as she's an almana living on the estate, she can live off of the estate. So if that's the case, we also have a similar halacha over here. It sounds the same. There's two different tenayim. One that supports the widow, and one that supports the female children until their marriage. The widow is supported until her marriage, and they're supported until their marriage. So now, in the case of the widow, it says beferish, that if she is now going to be living off of the estate, then if she's making a salary, ma'aseya deha shalahem. And the same thing should be true of the daughter, I would assume, says Rav Sheshes. Why should there be a difference between the two cases? So this is what Rav Sheshes says. Esra Vavina, I don't see what the proof is. Me, dummy. How can you compare the case of an almana to the case of the daughter? Almanato lo nechale baharvacha. Bito nechale baharvacha. When it comes to his widow, he has no interest in her having a lot of money to go taking world trips while he's in his grave. He's interested in her being supported. She wants to make another $1 million a year on her salary, then either let her drop her support from the estate and live off of her money, or give the money to the estate. Why should he be interested in letting her have a lot of money? Mashenkin, when it comes to his daughter, he's very happy. Let her have more money. She'll have a bank account. Guys will want her, and so on. So he thinks that's a good thing. But, I mean, here it's all of it. Isn't it dependent in what the original takana on the Tanayim is? In other words, the norm is that he's interested in having his daughter have more money, so then we should understand that the Tanai of the Ketuvah doesn't imply that she has to give her working salary just because she's living off of the estate. So you're saying he's more interested in his daughter than in his wife, in his widow? Is there not a halacha that says the opposite? Now, just again, a little bit of a background over here. The din of benot nukvin, which is the halacha that they get support, as long as they are unmarried, they get support off of the estate, actually comes, amazingly, before the rights of the male heirs. So in other words, let's say there's a concept called nechasim muati. Nechasim muati means you don't have enough to give everybody their parnos. And now you've got boys and you've got girls. Nechasim muatim, it's a machlokas. How do we measure nechasim muatim? It doesn't mean for today. I mean, we have over here at estate. So the question is, is it measured over the course of a year? How much money is coming in over the course of the year? Is it how much money will be available until such time as we can assume they'll be married? That we'll see later. But whatever nechasim muatim is, the halacha is that the girls are supported first, but if there's not enough money to support the boys, let them go and sell flowers on the street corner. No, over here it's women first, not children. So they come before the male children. Now, that's the background. But here our problem is that we see that when it comes to the relationship of the almana to the bat, we have an equivalent relationship of a bat to the sons. Because if there's not enough money to go around, we are going to support not the bat first, we're going to support the widow first, which implies that he's more concerned for his wife than his daughter. And you said he's more concerned for his daughter than his wife, and that's the reason you're not accepting my raya, says Rav Shish. I'm telling you that the almana has to give her salary to the household, and you're saying, yeah, but maybe the daughter doesn't, because he wants his daughter to have more money. But here we see the opposite. Let's see this inside. Are you telling me, says the Gemara, Lamemra, the Bito Adifale me Amanato, he's more interested in his daughter than in his widow? Asu Almana Etzelabat, Kibat Etzelachim, when it comes to Nechasim Muati. So the relationship of a widow towards a orphaned child female is the same relationship as the orphaned child female towards, in proportion to, the brothers that she has. When it comes to the Nechasim Muatim, which, as I said, is defined in different ways according to different shitas, but when there's not enough money to go around, whatever that means. And that implies that ma habat etzel achim, habat nizonet, ve'achim yish'alu al haptachim, when it comes to the relationship of the females to the males in the Nechasim Muatim, the din is we take care of the girls, and the boys can go knock on doors with a tin can as far as we're concerned. Af almana etzel habat, where we don't have enough money to go around. And the guy leaves a widow and a daughter. The almana, the money is first used to give what is required for the widow. And the daughter can go out and sell flowers. And she can go with her tin can al haptachim. So that shows that he's more interested in his wife than he is in his daughter.
Can his will change that?
No, this is a tanai. In the ketuvah. I mean, it is possible that we'll see later on what happens if a person wants to change her. If she doesn't like the tanai of the ketuvah, we'll see. We're going to be open to that discussion later. Actually, we even begin a little bit of it today. So, it says the Gemara, yeah, that's true, but you're comparing two completely different cases. What I said was that maybe a guy is more interested in his daughter's large bank account than he is that his widow should have a large bank account. And I still maintain that that's true. And you're bringing me a raya from the fact that the guy is willing to have his daughter sell flowers, but not his widow sell flowers. And I don't think the two things are comparable at all. Le'inyan ziluta, when it comes to a decline in the fortunes of the family, and now he's cheapening his wife by having her go out and sell flowers, he certainly would prefer that his children should go out and sell the flowers, not the old lady. But that doesn't mean that he wants necessarily that she should have a lot of money to go around on a yacht. He's sitting there in his grave and she's having all the fun. So that he's not interested in. So Memela over there, le'inyan ziluta, indeed he's more concerned to protect his almana from ziluta than he is the bat. But le'inyan harvacha, that there should be a lot of extra money to go around. What's the old lady need so much money for? The new generation, I understand, they need money. They still have what to do in life. So they're bito adifale. Mosif Rav Yosef. Ma'asei, now Rav Yosef didn't like Rav Sheshes's job. Rav Sheshes is insisting over here that it's similar to the case of the almana, and just like the halacha is that the almana has to give her salary to the household, the bat has to give her salary to the household. Ask Rav Yosef, does it not say, ma'asei adea umetziyata afal pi shelo gavta meta av harayin shalachin? Could you please look at our Mishnah? I'll bet you guessed we were going to look at our Mishnah. Because otherwise, what the heck does this have to do with our sugya? But if you take a look at our Mishnah, after Rabbi Shimon gives his whole discussion there, about, well, until the father actually collects the money, then he's not considered to be the owner, and if he dies, that his male children don't get it, it goes to her. Big finish. But when it comes to, look at the Mishnah, look at that nice lashon, the first words on the page of that membez yesterday's that. Ma'aseh yadea umetziyata, afa pishalo gavta, the din is meitav harein shalachi. So the salary, she hasn't yet collected the check. The father dies, check comes in the mail. Now, look, is that over there he's considered to be the owner because that's mama. Or she found something, even though it wasn't collected. That's weird, you don't collect something that you find, which you're going to talk about later. Now, the father dies, there his heirs do inherit that money, and it's considered to be his own because it's mama. Okay. Now, I say, says Rabbi Yosef, if it says over there, Arayin Shalachi, And the Mishnah says the reason that Hare and Shelachim is because of the fact that the father had been alive when the money was due, except the Gviyah was done afterwards, right? Now, isn't that awfully clear that it's only because they're inheriting the money, for heaven's sakes? But if the father had died before she made the money, so then it wouldn't belong to the brothers. I don't understand. How could you possibly say that if the father dies for the next 5 years, she's going to be giving her salary to the brothers? So can you tell me what the Mishnah is talking about? The Mishnah says, well, if the check was in the mail, then it gets to the brothers. What's the difference when the check is coming? Even if she would work a year from now, the money would be going to the brothers. You see clearly from the Mishnah that that's not true. And I assume, my lav, benizonet, I assume it's talking about that the father had died and the brothers are going to have to provide for this child as long as she's unmarried from the estate. And nonetheless, it says the only part of the money that they get that she worked is money that the father, while the father was alive, was due to the father. Says Gemara, you can ask your kasha from Reb Sheshes based on an assumption that it must probably be talking about a case where she's nizonet. Maybe it's just talking about where she's not nizonet. Mishena nizonet. Mishena nizonet. So my lamer, I said, what's the finish? I need a Mishnah to tell me that money that belongs to the father is inherited by his sons. What do I need a Mishnah to tell me that? I mean, there should be no problem over here at all. Afila l'man d'yomer. Now, this is a little bit problematic. Tosfos, in fact, has a different girsa. Because the shail is, when we say it's talking about the ein nizonet, does that mean that there's not enough money in the state to be mazing her, and that even when the father was alive, she wasn't nizonet? So then what was it then while the father was alive? We'll see in a moment. Or does it mean, actually, she was nizonet while the father was alive? The father was working, but it was sort of hand-to-mouth. Now, it's talking about when she's not getting nizonet from the yachim. Father isn't there anymore, and they're not supporting her. Now, if they support her, there were. There's not money in the state. So there's two different ways of understanding the sugya over here. If we understand that it's talking about the she'ena nizonet, and she wasn't nizonet mina'av either, so then the question over here is not my lememra, but rather, then the question is, and skip the words, this is how Tosfos says it, and then skip the words Maila Memra, and simply say, why in the world would it be that she should have to give the money over? If she wasn't Nizonet, not from the father, and not from the brothers, so then we should say over here, why even in a case of the Meta Avare and Shelachin, even the father shouldn't have gotten the money? Because the halacha is that afilu lemandi amar yochol harav lomar le'eved aseini ve'enizancha. We'll see that there's a machlokus later on whether a guy can say now to his eved, look, I don't owe you anything. I own you. So I don't want to feed you. You want to eat, go ahead and koshish kash, like Paro did to us. You find a way to eat, but you're going to work for me anyway. So a guy can say that to his eved, but that's only an eved knani. Because by an Eved Knani, it doesn't say anywhere in the Torah, Imcha, or Imach, it doesn't say that he has to be together with you, Tov lo Imach, or anything like that, right? So if that's the case, that's true about an Eved. But an Eved Ivri, where it does say in the Torah, a Lashon of Imach, so over there, Hachnata Yavro Yavod, there it says Yavod Imach. Imach means he's together with you on your table, you have to take good care of him. So, I mean, that's even an Eved, okay?
So, you own, you have to feed him.
Even if you own an Eved, you have to feed
him. Animal, you have to feed him.
That's because an animal can't take care of itself, but a human can take care of itself. So, where it talks about an Eved, lo koshikein, bito, I mean, obviously, his daughter, he would be now in a matzav of saying to her, I'm taking your salary, but I'm not providing for you. That's ridiculous. So why was the father getting the money? I understand. You're saying the check is in the mail. Father dies, the sons are going to inherit it. He doesn't get that check if you're talking about that it wasn't nizonet. Okay? That's if we leave out the words, Maila Meima. If we understand that the children are not being mefarnes, the father was mefarnes, and that the father gets it, but that the sons won't get it, then the Maila Meima means, so what would be the finish? Why would we think that the sons would get it? They're not giving anything in exchange to be able to get it. So it can't be that it's talking about Mishain and Nizonet, either of the Lashonis. It has to be talking about that she is Nizonet. And nonetheless, the Mishnah says the only money that the brothers get from her salary is money that was due while the father was living. But money that she works for now, they're not going to have a chelik in. So how did Reb Sheshes come off saying such a thing, that the din is that it's she, the bat, is exactly the same as the almanah, and that she has to give her salary to the household? Omar Rava Barula, wait a second, who's to say we're talking about the salary over here which covers the money that she's being mitparnesim? Maybe what we're talking about over here is lahadafa. In other words, ma'aseyadea, after the death of her father, it's talking about indeed behin and nizonet. But the question over here is, what's she going to, what, well, you're asking, what do you mean? She's not worse than an Eved. I mean, how is she supposed to give away her salary and not have what to eat? No. This girl is making $1 million a month. So, yes, she's got plenty of money to eat. That's not the issue. So that's 100%. She can keep for herself. The shaila is, what about the rest of the money? Besides what she needs to eat. Her parnasa is well taken care of. What about the hadafa? So it's coming to Tony, the halacha of the hadafa. That's all that you should know. That it's only the b'chayei av. I mean, that's the baila meimra. Why not? Oh my, Rava, you know, isn't that sort of an obvious answer? So what was Rav Yosef thinking? Rav Yosef isn't stupid. Rav Yosef has the kasha from the Mishnah. And he said, well, it's got to be talking about, the Mishnah's got to be talking about Shein and Nizona, and she's giving her the money, and so on. Where Lamaisa, and I mean, that's the point. The point of the Mishnah is the Diyak, that Maisa Yadea, after the death of the father, is indeed La'atzma, and it's not Nizonet, but it's talking about where there's Hadafa. Rav Yosef made a whole Diyak, it's talking about where there's not Nizonet, and therefore it's a Raya against Rav Sheshet. He told me Rav Yosef couldn't figure out the difference between a extra money that's coming in, or the money that we're talking about, Kineged, the Maisa Yadea, that's Kineged, the money that she's taking from the estate. I mean, it's so obvious. There's got to be something else that he was asking. Gav Rabbik Rav Yosef Lo Yoda the Ikaha the Favik Motiv Tiyufta. But he's asking a Tiyufta from the Mishnah against Rav Sheshet when there's such an easy way out of it. I mean, this guy knows how to play chess. Let me tell you something. If he thought that he had Rav Sheshet checkmated, he wasn't playing tiddlywinks. So what was he thinking? I'm telling you, we didn't understand his question. The move is much more sophisticated than we thought. What Rav Yosef must have been asking was something that was much more powerful. I'll tell you what it was. Elam or Rabbi Rav Yosef was saying, can you please look at the Mishnah? Look at the Mishnah carefully. Matnitin gufa kashale. What is the meaning of the closing line of the Mishnah that says, Ma'aseh yadea umitziyata afa pishalo gafta? What do you mean, mitziyata afa pishalo gafta? There's no such thing as being gova mitziyah. Mitziyata, miman gavya. She found something. Who exactly is she supposed to be collecting it from? Either she found it or she didn't find it. What is she talking to? The oysters about the pearl that one day they're going to deliver? She either found the pearl or she didn't find the pearl. So something's funny about this Mishnah. So therefore, I'm asking you to please be medayim. The only way that it could make sense, elalav argika amar. Rabbi Yosef is saying, look, the Mishnah must be telling me like this. If I mention now mitziyah together with ma'aseh yadayim, it's to tell me that ma'aseh yadayim has the same halacha as mitziyata. Just like mitziyata, b'chayei ha'av la'av la'achar mitata av la'atzma. There's not a suffix in the world. That's something that she finds. Definitely is not being given to the sons. Because even the father doesn't really have a right to mitziah. Mitziah comes from out of left field. The only reason that a father who's being mefarnes, a child, gets to keep the mitziah is because of the possibility of her keeping, let's just say she wins the lottery, and she doesn't share it with the father who's been supporting her. You can understand that this may lead to some strained relationships, to say the least. It's called eiva. So we're chayshish leiva. We want to encourage the support of children. We don't want parents to wake up too early. Because then what are the kid's going to do? So therefore, we say if she wins the lottery, she has to give it to the father. But that's only a takana mishum eiva. In a case where she now is being provided legally through the courts out of the estate, why in the world would we give a mitziah to the brothers? We have nothing to be worried about. This is part of Tanai Bezdin that's supporting her. It's not out of the goodness of their heart. So what are they going to say? Look at this. That is really some gratitude for you. We've been supporting you for the past 10 years, and you win the lottery, and you don't give us a penny. The goodness of your heart, gratitude. What goodness of heart and gratitude? The courts send me a check every month. You keep trying to fight it anyway. Right? So over there, we're not kind. So for sure, when it comes to Mitzia, there's no suffix whatsoever that the brothers are not going to get that unless they inherit it from the father who got the Mitzia while she was alive. Therefore, that's my diak against Rav Sheshet, says Rav Yosef. That just like Mitzia, if the Mishnah does something so absurd as putting together Ma'aseh Yadayim with Mitzia, where the word Mitzia, it makes no sense in context because there's no Gviya. You're trying to tell me, Apa Pishalogava? Of course, Apa Pishalogava. The only explanation is that the Mishnah is trying to say, look, the Ma'aseh Yadayim as the Mitzia, without Gviya, meaning as a mitziah is, there's such a thing as a biyah, is the same as a mitziah. Mitziah, we understand, there's no tzad to say that we're going to provide it to the brothers. So too the ma'aseh yadayim, we won't provide to the brothers. That's all that it's saying. Now that's a diyuk already. Shmamina. And that proves that Rav Sheshes is wrong, and that Lamaisa, we will not give this curse to the brothers.
The normal thing it should have said is,
no, there's no point mentioning Mitziyata, because if she found it, then she found it.
But that would have told you, would it say, Masi Adav Shalom Mitziyata, would be maybe that. As opposed to that.
Okay, no, I mean, but there would be no Kiddush B'Klal in that. And once I know that, so, that even without Gviya Mammon, it isn't...
But this forces the issue. Yeah,
and this is saying, and that's the whole point of the Mishnah. I mean, the Mishnah is making a diyuk. The Mishnah's not coming to tell me a big Kiddush that the father gets it. The Mishnah's coming to tell me, but if the father hadn't gotten it, then the children wouldn't have gotten it. And that means that the whole point of the Mishnah is to tell us what Sheshet is wrong. And that's not a powerful diyuk. That's what Rabbi Yossi was coming to tell us. Now, nothing based on assumptions, but rather a very clear analysis of the extra word. Ichmanami. And indeed, here we see Rav Paskin is not that way. Not like Rav Sheshet said to compare a bat to an almana, but rather just like Rav Yosef was mitvayik from the Mishnah, maaseh yadayim after the death of the father belonged to herself. Omer of Kahana, my timer. What is the basis of all of this halacha that the children do not inherit the rights that the father had? Because we find when it comes to avadim, so there the Torah says if you own. On Eved Knani, v'itnachaltem otam livnechem acharechem, that you can now use this Eved as chattel, and in the event of your death, your heirs will inherit it. So that means you own an Eved, it's like owning a house. Same as real estate. But meanwhile, we could be medayek, that it says, v'itnachaltem otam livnechem, rights that you have to an Eved Knani, yes. But lo benotechem livnechem, you can't give rights to your daughters, to your sons. A person cannot give over the rights that the Torah gave him to his daughter's money to give that right over to the son and say, okay, now you take over as an heir my rights to your sister. There's no such thing. The Torah gave the rights to the father and did not give the rights to the brother. He says, Gemara, well, I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a reference to Maisi Adayim. I mean, come on. You know perfectly well that this pasuk is not referring to Maisi Adayim, and this pasuk is referring to the things that we were talking about before. The knas, we were talking about the knas of a mafata, the knas of a nainus, maybe that's all it's talking about. So we're talking about bepitui, starting your matkav rava, the ima bepitui abad, and knasot, or chavalot, I mean things over there, ones. We saw earlier that we call ones the knas, and we call pitui. Remember, Tosis thought maybe some tried to change the gears before. Instead of pitui and ones to pitui and knas to pitui and ones. But there's a Rishonim explained that the word knas makes sense to use for ones more than it does for a mafata, because the ones pays no matter what, even if he doesn't marry her. Hashem can the mafata as an option. So maybe we could use the word knas. Or because it's a bigger knas, because he has to be shoteba atzitzo, that's another approach. But whatever the lashon over here is the same problematic lashon that we had earlier, and it's acceptable that maybe we're talking about knas and ones, knas of a befat and knas of an ones, or we're talking about chavalot. We're talking about that problem in a moment. Chavalot. Hakatov medaber.
Can we see from this that the onus of those times was different than today? Whereas today we see that the women, it's an act of violence, or so it's predicted. So why would we allow somebody
to do
this act of violence to be forced to marry? I mean, it must have been a totally different world.
No. But now it's not time to discuss it. We've been talking about this issue a long time. You would attend sporadically. So maybe that's what we're talking about, but we're not talking about the Maisi Adayim that we're giving the father over here from exchange for money that he's paying her and so on to taking care of her. I mean, maybe if they are also doing that, maybe they should get this chuster by siyadayim, because they're also supplying her with that parnasa. And indeed, v'chei tana rav chanina, that the pasuk is referring to pitui abad, or knasot, or chavalot, hakatuv b'dam. Chavalot, wait. What chavalot are we talking about over here? The Torah doesn't give a father the right to a chavala. That's tzara de gufa. The halacha is that in a case where there is a damage to a person's child, either a son or a daughter, so the Gemara says he has to make an investment out of that, and it's kept in trust for until the child grows up. father doesn't keep money that an insurance company pays for damages against its children. So what are we talking about over here? Why did you add chavalot? I mean, that's tzara de gufei. That Torah never gave a father the rights to pain that a child suffers, other than particularly in this context of the ones. Amar Rav Yosef bar Chanina, it means over here chavalot of the type of shipatzah mibifadeh. Over there, if the father would have been alive, so then since he has the rights to her, this now takes away her value. And that is a value that it belongs to the father, because he has the right for Becher, and he can accept Kiddushin and so on. So, but that's what it's talking about. I'm referring to Tsar in general. But in any event, if that's what the reference is to the Pasuk, then of course it doesn't address our issue. Omer Amas Omer Av, Amr Omer Mizera. One is Omer Rav Zera, and one is Omer Rabbi Zera. There's a two Lashonis. This is, by the way, the same person. The difference is that in Bavel, remember that Rav Zera came up, he was on that fasting 40 times. He was coming up from Bavel. He should forget Talmud. Bavli said he should be able to learn Talmud Yerushalmi with a new heart. So before he came to Eretz Yisrael, they called him Rav Zera. Once he came to Eretz Yisrael, they called him, because the reason is they didn't want ever to call Rabbi, because there's no sneeze in Bavel. So to distinguish an Amora and Bavel from someone in Eretz Yisrael, they wouldn't use the word Rabbi. Because Rabbi implies a shayach, at least a smicha. But Rabbi Zera couldn't have gotten smicha when he was Bavel. So therefore, there's a machlokas over here, whether it was Rav Zera while he was in Bavel, who said this over from Rav, or was Rabbi Zera after he got smicha in Eretz Yisrael, who said this mimer over from Rav. But it's the same person. And what is the mimer? That bat hanizonet min ha'achin ma'aseh yadeh al atzma. It's here it says that she, Rav Paskin, that she gets to keep her own money, but based on the Pasuk. So Omar Le Avimi Bar Papi, Rav Avimi Bar Papi said to Rav Zera, oh, Shakod Amra. That was said by Mr. Shakod. Who's that? Shakod money. What code does Shakod stand for? Shmuel. They used to call Shmuel Shakod. Why did they call Shmuel Shakod? Rashi says they call Shmuel Shakod because since we paskin like him when it comes to dinim, so he is very, we call him Shakod because he was very shokade to say things only la halacha. Shvacha pshat. The Oros pshat, they called him shokade because he was an unbelievable matzim. There's an amazing pshat. I don't believe it's the pshat, but you can see how desperate we are to figure out the name for this nickname. The Chavis Yoyer says a pshat in Shikod, which is amazing. He says that in order for halacha to be like you in dini, and Shmuel was like a dayan, it's an entire different psychology. Dayan psychology is an entirely different psychology than normal psychology. Because, moments. Because you need to, it's not in Israel, Elasa. In the dinim of momentus. Because when it comes to momentus, and it's always when you read overshadows and jurists and so on, of actual cases, you get this sense so strongly, is that you have to have an incredible imagination to be able to be a dayan. Because you need to look into the other person's mind. You need to figure out the types of distinctions, and not just abstract distinctions, very practical distinctions in terms of how people think. And in order to do that, on the base of just like a very imaginative chap, of how to look at a sukkah, you need a lot of creativity, a lot of imagination. So he times the Chavos Yoyer that they called him Shakod because of the word Mishukadim. Mishukadim means Mitsuyarim. Mitsuyarim means imaginatively decorated. So they called him Shakod because he was so imaginative. Very interesting. No, that's the Aruch Shat. This is a different
problem. All the case, it's yours.
Right. Lu Yitzuyar, we say, right? So if you could imagine a case, we call it the Yitzuyar, so that's Shabbat. Very interesting chat. Okay. But in any event, didn't Shmuel say that? What do you mean, didn't Shmuel? No, Shmuel didn't say that. We had just a minute ago. Omer Yehuda, Omer Rav, Bata Nizadet Benachim, Masayed El Atzma. What are you telling me Shmuel said it? Rav Zeri isn't the only one who says this. We know this from the Rav Yehuda, Omer Rav also. Rav said it. Ema, I don't mean Shmuel as opposed to Rav. I was just telling you, Av Shakod Amra. You know, our good friend Shakod, he also said that. Refer to Shmuel.
Something that is causing Shmuel Shakti.
Maybe that's it. I don't know. Oma mar bar amemel ravashi, hochi yami naradoi, ilchata kavati rapsheshes. In narado, they passed him like rapsheshes, based on the comparison to the almana, and they said that her income, if she's being provided for by the estate, goes to the household. And Rav Ashi Amar, Yochasakavasid Rav, that she gets to keep it herself, and that's not given over to these sons. And the halacha, indeed, Yochasakavasid Rav, the halacha is like Rav, that Maaseya De'Ala Atzma, even not in cases of Arvacha. No, believe. We're up to the mission, man. No, but Rav Sheshes argued. So the guy accepts now Kiddushin. He saw that a daughter does not leave the Rishus of the father just with Kiddushin, only with Nisuin. So what happens is that the suitor who gave the Kiddushin ends up giving her a get for Kiddushin as well. So now the father goes and accepts Kiddushin from a second guy. And this guy dies. Okay. Meanwhile, she's collecting money. I found enough feed. I mean, one guy dies. This Tana holds that we give a ketuvah even to an arusa. So meanwhile, she's still a ketana, or naira. He still has the rights to her because she didn't. And actually, it's a pretty good business he's into over here. So he si'ah v'girsha. On the other hand, so over there, the ketuvah shalo, he collects the ketuvah. We know that that's the halacha that you collect. The ketuvah, as long as she wasn't yotzei min reshusa. On the other hand, if he siyah v'girsha, if already he accepted and brought it to the chuppah, now he lost the reshusa. So now he gives her a get later. Father doesn't get it. He siyah v'nit armala, but the guy dies. Father doesn't get it. So their ketuvah tashala. Says Ravina, no, the first husband's ketuvah is actually, it goes to the father. Even though she's already in nesua. Harishonah la'af. Umrullah, what do you mean? Mishi si'ah in lavi arashutba. Why should it go to the father? The moment that she was given over to the chuppah, she now is not in the reshut of the father. So if the guy gives her a get, so now she's not going to give it to the father. What's your svara? Then the Gemara will explore Rav Yehuda's reasoning. But you'll notice that the two cases over here is that first she gets divorced, eventually then the husband dies, one after the other. I mean, we didn't have to change the rules. Why do we have to say, yisiyah v'girshah, yisiyah v'nitar malah? And then we talked about then he goes ahead and he could go and be after the first case. Why do we take this case? Because we didn't want to talk about a case of nit'armla trezimni. Because if it was nit'armla trezimni, at that point, lo chazili in suve. So the Tana didn't want to, so she wouldn't be able to get married again. Tana didn't want to talk about a horrible case where the woman is b'chla not allowed to get married and deal with that issue. So he talks about a benign case. The benign case is her husband first, he dies. He divorces her, the second husband died, but if two husbands in a row would have died, that would have been bad news, and therefore, she was poisonous at an early age. No, it talks about Yisiyah.
Yisiyah,
I mean, that's already the question where, especially if Mayan Goren, right? So that's why we take Tosus points this out. The reason we look at the Yisiyah instead of the Nitasa is because it's a machlokus, whether it's a mazel issue or whether because we assume that she has some kind of disease and that maybe there's a venereal disease. So in the case of Erisin, we're not concerned about for venereal disease because I mean, they're supposedly not sleeping with each other. But in the case of Nisuin and he dies, two husbands die, there we are concerned that there's some type of disease that she carries. And over there, so we didn't want to look at it. The first case, right? The second case is why the Tana was mocked. Now, Agav Urche, you'll notice, by the way, that the Tana is mocked to say this because he wants to give us a stam mission like Rebbe. Rebbe says, betray Zimne Avichazaka, that even though only two husbands die, that's enough to prevent him from getting married the third time. And not that we should go now with a shita that says three times the Chazaka, you got it. You know, if you want to be the third husband, it's also okay. You know, it's the next guy who will decide not to be done. So, betray Zimne Avichazaka. Rav Yehuda Eimer, Harishonah Shel Av. In a case where she went to the chuppah, nonetheless, the first time she goes to the chuppah, the guy divorces her father, the father gets it. Why? My time to Rav Yehuda, L'chayra the Rabbanan, 100% right. The moment she went to the chuppah, the father doesn't have any rishus. Rava and Rav Yosef both said, the svara was, Ho'il Mishat Erisin Zacha Ba'hena Av. Look, the truth is that according to this Tana, the ketuvah is awarded to an arusa. But that means that when you write the ketubah, that's when you have the shibud. And when he writes the ketubah, so now all of the all of the rights to the property and so on are at that point, if there's going to be a divorce or a death, she already gets the right to collect from this husband's property. So that means that that already came into effect while she was still in the rishus of the father. So if that's the case, then the father should be zocheh, says Rav Yehuda, even if later on now she already went to the chuppah, and at this point she's not in the rishus of the father, but the initial ketubah was given over to the father. So how should he not get the money? He gets the money then at whatever point that it's collected.
Then it'll be
even when she becomes a father. Wait, I'm going to ask. Mosif Rava Rabbi Yehuda Omer HaRishonah Shel Av. But Moda Rabbi Yehuda B'ma'areset B'toki Shiktana U'Bagra V'achar Kach Miseit She'en Lavi HaRishut Ba. Now this makes no sense according to you. Rabbi Yehuda is Moda that if she became a Bogeret and left the Rishus of the father after the Erisin and now goes to the Chuppah, there I made it that the father doesn't get now away. That doesn't make any sense. If the point is that from the moment that there is a schut to a ketuvah, which according to this Tana, is b'sha'at eusin, and that schut is given to the father, so who cares if she was bagra in between? You're telling me that there's basically a contractual obligation, that's a tanai bezdin, that was a takon of bezdin, and for some reason, even though it was made to him, he doesn't get to collect it. Why not? If the svari is that it has to do with the tanai bezdin, so then that's what it has to do with. I should say the same thing. Amai, Hafinami Lamech, say exactly the same svara, Rabban Rabbi Yosef, that you said in the first case. You could say, who cares if in the middle she was Nidbagra? Therefore, we must have misquoted Rabban Rabbi Yosef, because certainly it does not cover Rav Yehuda Shita. Elai itmar, hochi itmar. Actually, it's a whole different thing. What they said was, Rabban Rabbi Yosef, Amri Tarvayu, ho il ubrishuto nichtavin. Since the ketubah is written at the time that she goes to the chuppah, even if she has a right to a ketubah as an arusa, the norm is that the ketubah is written by the chuppah, and we give her the ketubah, like we do today, we give her the ketubah for the chuppah. So therefore, since it was while she was still in his rishus, which means that she wasn't bagra, she's still in the rishus of the father until the actual kenisa of the chuppah, so since it was written under the chuppah, by the time of Nisuin, therefore it goes to the father. But had she been a Bogeret at the time that we wrote the Ketubah, because she was a Bogeret when she went to the Chuppah, then Ein Ochinami, I never would have said that the father is the one who gets it. And indeed, that reflects Rav Yehuda Shita very accurately. Rav Yehuda says, I made it that if she grew up between the Erisin and the Chuppah, that the father does not collect the Ketubah. Now this leads us to a further question. Because once we've raised the issue of when the chiyuv of the ketuvah is considered to be in the rishus of the father, we have to consider another question. And we're distinguishing now between the erisin, which gets the rights, the theoretical rights to the ketuvah, as they're given over in the court, but it's not contractual yet in the sense it hasn't been written. So there's no shtar. Then we write the shtar later. Now we just made a chilek between writing the shtar, that's when the father, if the father is the rishus, then he can collect, but not from the rights, only from the actual ketuvah. Now, that seems to relate the issue over here to the concept of the she'ibud. Now, let's remember, she'ibud is a lien. Let us recall that a lien is usually dependent on having an actual written shtar, for a very good reason. Ava, if you go out and buy a piece of property, you need to be able to check the title, right? Now, if you can't check the title, then it's not fair for somebody to come afterwards and say, well, I had a lien, because I had a verbal agreement that I am supposed to be meshabed my property to this person. You say, what, you had a verbal agreement between the two of you that nobody knew about, and therefore I lose my money because the guy sold me the field and absconded, and now someone's going to take the field away from me? You can't do that with a verbal agreement. If you want that there should be a lien on your property, then you have to make it public. And it has to be something that a title company can check out. They're not going to be able to check out verbal agreements. Therefore, we make a takana. The only way to have a lien is where you, against the property, a lien that is strong enough. We're talking about a lien. We're talking about a lien that is strong enough to take the property away from a buyer who came subsequent to the lien. And there's no, I have no recourse except to this field. And now you own this field. I say to you, I'm sorry, sir, you own a field that I had a lien against. Pay me my lien and you can keep your field. The only time we say that is if I had a way to check it out when I bought the field. So therefore, you want a lien, you have to have a contract. It's got to be written up.
So it gets to look at the kesuba?
No, the din of a contract is because once there is a contract, people know there's a contract. Doesn't matter. Once there's it's called a kol. In other words, word gets around. So something that is private, word doesn't get around. Something that is written up and you had a sofer, and you have the edim, and they had the kriyat haktuvah, and everybody knows about it.
And is the price discounted by that amount?
Absolutely. Sure. If I'm going to buy a field, and it's got a lien against it, just like today, I'm not going to buy your house when I may have to pay up the mortgage. I'll discount the mortgage, obviously. So I'm going to discount any possibility. I mean, if the guy is rich and there's plenty of other money, maybe I won't discount it by much. Maybe I'll give you 95 cents on a dollar, because I know you're a rich guy anyway. I'm not really worried that they're going to come and collect from me. They're going to first take your money out of the bank account, not come to my field. But you never know. So discount it. Obviously, it depends on the market value, like anything else. We always make an analysis how much we should discount.
Ksuv is always there, right?
A ksuv is always there. But, so here's the question. You just made a chilek between the ksuv that is there legally but isn't written. So you said if the father owned her, so to speak, owned these rights at the time of the erisin, that's insufficient for him to collect the ksuvah later. He had to own the rights at the time they wrote out the ksuvah. Now that leads me to suspect that even though everybody knows about the marriage, so you could say as Abba is saying, well, there's always a ksuvah. So therefore the guy, when he buys, he should think to himself, hey, wait a minute, the guy's married, right? So now if I'm buying a field, what's to prevent now this woman of his from suing him for a divorce? And then they're coming to me one day and saying that my field is the money that she's supposed to collect for her divorce. For some reason, we seem to be saying that the father's rights to it is only from the time of the ksiva of the ksiva, the actual shtar. Therefore, this is how Tosus understands it. Therefore, we now are asking, because of what we just raised, how does that impact the question of the collection of a shtar ketuvah where everybody knew that the chiyuv was there for before, but it hadn't been written? Is that part of the normal din of liens requiring contracts, or do we say that any title company can find out she's married? That's the question. Rashi learns that this is a general issue. Do we say that where there is a takana rabbana, that you can collect a lien on a takana rabbana, or do we say that it's considered to be a milvalpeh, the equivalent of a verbal loan, and a verbal loan can't be collected? So, till the time of the ketiva, where it becomes a milva bishtar, Tosis is very, very bothered by this, because he says to them, what does it have to do with our sugya? It's completely irrelevant to our sugya. You can ask this as a general question. When do you collect the ketuva? Is it only from when it was written, or is it just even when it's a tonight test? Therefore, Tosis says, no, it's clearly, it relates to what we just discussed. We just made the distinction in terms of the father. So now we want to know, how does that impact the dinim of collection, legabe, the din of she'ibud? Okay, so the question over here is, asks the Gemara, what would be the din of the way Rav Yosef and Rabbi explained it, according to this, what would be the din of collection? So, migva me'imas gather, when would you collect it? Omer Avuna, I'll tell you. The ikatsuva, where everybody knows that if she was a betula, there was a matayim, or if she was an amanah, there was a monah. I mean, but everybody knows this woman was married. Either she got married, this was the second marriage, or this was the first marriage. I mean, the people know, so the title company knows. Okay, so for sure that first monah or matayim, that is min ha'eris. The moment that the ketubah is due, even if it wasn't written, everybody knows about it, and therefore you can collect it even from a field that had been sold after the erisin, but before the chuppah, which in those days was all year. You could collect that because the buyer should have known. Hey, wait a minute, the guy's married, he better discount the field because she's going to come collect from it if he gets divorced and dies. But the Tosefet, now how is anybody supposed to know? The guy wrote her out of ksuvah, by the way, you're such a wonderful woman, I want to make this $1 million ksuvah because this is $1 million marriage. All those poor fools who do that, right? So he gives her $1 million ksuvah. Now that obviously has to be written up in order to protect somebody for a time. I mean, how are they supposed to know about that? So that part comes only min ha'nisuin. Whereas Rav Asi says, echad zevi, echad ze, it doesn't matter whether you're talking about the Tosefet, you're talking about the Ikra Ketuvah, you need to have a shtar. And if you don't have a shtar, you can't collect it. So Rav Asi, I don't care whether you're talking about Mona Matayim, or you're talking about the Tosefet, we have to have it only from the time of the actual marriage where it's written out. Because Lamaisa, a woman understands, until she gets the actual shtar of the Ketuvah, the part about the collection is not going to be chal. And it's not... It's not that we're stealing from her. We're saying, well, you thought you were going to... She's mochelet because she understands. I didn't get the shtar yet. So this is the level of the rights that I have. I can collect from money that the guy has. If he doesn't have money, okay. I mean, look, we're not really married yet in the sense of having gone to the... When she goes to the chuppah, then she wants already her rights to collect no matter what. How can Rav Huna have... You're telling me that Rav Huna said you can collect separately? 100 or 200 for the time of the erisin, and then when you write out the shtar, then you collect the extra part. But that doesn't make sense. Rav Huna himself, Paskins... A very interesting halacha. A woman has two ketuvot for two different amounts. So a woman presents two ketuvot. Very interesting. One of them is for the typical 200. The other one, which is dated a year later, is for 300. She presents both of them to Beit Din. What's the halacha? Says Rav Huna, this is the same Rav Huna that you just spoke about, says Rav Huna, I'll tell you. If batalik bot matayim, govam is man rishon. If she wants to use the first shtar, why would she want to use the first shtar? Well, there's only one value to the first shtar, and that is that it had an earlier lien, because it was written out a year earlier, right? So if she wants to use that shtar for collection, so then she's limited to the face value of the shtar. The face value of that shtar is 200. She can't say, yeah, but the guy added 100. Yeah, but the guy added 100 in a different shtar a year later. So there was no lien for that. You can't, you're either going to use that shtar, you're going to use that shtar. So if you want to collect from the earlier shtar because you need that in order to be able to exercise a lien against the only field that the guy had, so then she can only collect matayim. So gova bizman harishon. If she wants a 300, then she can't collect it from the Gmazban Arishon. She can only collect it from a year later. If the guy had a field a year later, fine, then she can exercise her lien against that field. But if the field had already been sold by the time a year later comes about, then she can't use the shtar for anything, because it's too late. So if she wants a 300, she's going to have to collect Mizban Asheni. Now, didn't you just say that Rav Huna is willing to break up the components of the Ketubah? Rav Huna says, okay, collect the first 100 or the first 200, collect it from the time of the Erusin, and then the additional money that he promises her, that you can collect only from the time of the shtar. That's what he said. I mean, if Rav Huna says that, the imita, if it's true that Rav Huna actually said that the first part of a debt can be collected from the first zman, and the addition to a debt is collected from the second zman, then it's the same situation over here. The first part of the debt was 200, which is now incorporated in the additional 300. So don't collect the full 300. Collect 200 from the earlier shtar, and then come along and collect the additional 100 as the tesefet from the second shtar. That would be consistent with what Rav Huna is saying over here. Well, what possible difference would there be? So Tigbe. We're going to see. Tigbe matayim is mana rishon, umeyam is mana asheni. Now, you're not thinking. Let me ask you something. The way you're looking at it, why can't she collect a full 500? 200 with one star and 300 from another. I mean, are you thinking that too? Tigbe chamesh meot. Right? So she can be able to collect over here the full kulam, the full 500. 200 of it from the Zman HaRishon, 300 of it from the Zman HaShinim, and that's what you're asking, aren't you? Because, I mean, you're comparing it to a case where now she's coming up with $1 million ketubah. So you're saying, okay, so the first 200 she could collect from the first, and the rest she can collect from the last. So same thing over here. The first 200 she collects from the first, and the rest, which is now 300, she should collect from the last. Now, obviously, you're not going to say that. Why aren't you going to say that? Chamesh meot my time alogavya. Why isn't she collecting 500? Because obviously, kiman de lo katavla, since he did not write the following standard language, the standard language for adding money to a ketubah, as opposed to rewriting a ketubah for a higher amount, the standard language goes like this. Saviti, I really wanted to, I felt that I needed to, v'yosifitla, and I'm adding to you talat mea amatayim. I'm adding another 300 above and beyond the normal ketuvah, because you are such a special woman. We've been married now for 5 years, and I want to show how much I appreciate it. That's the way that you write the shtar. And that makes it very clear that you don't mean to take the place of the original ketuvah, you mean to add to the original ketuvah. But if you write another ketuvah, now it's for 300, as far as we know, what you're doing is you're replacing your original ketuvah. You can't collect both shtarot. You understand that as well. Once you understand that, the meaning of issuing two shtarot and allowing her to have two shtarot is a very clear meaning. Because if you go ahead now and tell this, you tell your wife in 5 years, you know what, I want to add, and I want you to have a better ketuvah, so I'm going to give you a 300. If your wife is smart, she'll say, very clever. You want me to have the 300 ketuvah so that I won't be able to collect from the field that you sold last year. But you're putting a nice face onto it. I ain't. So if she's smart, she's going to figure this guy is really trying to undercut me. So therefore, what must have happened is that the guy gives her an option. He says, darling, chas v'shalom, if you want to collect from the first ketuvah, by all means, collect from an earlier shtar. But of course, you can only collect 200. There's nothing I can do about that. I can't give you an earlier lien. I mean, I can't predate something that's stealing from a buyer. But what I'll do is I'll give you another shtar. So if you see that you have what to collect from, you can use your more valuable shtar, even though it's dated a year later, 5 years later. And if, chas v'shalom, it turns out that I die leaving you nothing to collect from, then you take the earlier shtar, and then you can collect from, and this way you have it either way. But if he meant a different legal meaning over here, he meant for the second shtar to be added, then he would have said so. But what must have happened over here is that he gave her an option. So therefore, she has a right to select her option. That's all. Well, why would you expect it to be otherwise? So kima de lo katava, since he did not write the standard language of saviti v'yasifit lachtlat me'amatayim ha'chika amarlav, then what he really meant to say was, is, look, imizman rishon gaviyet, gaviyamatayim, if you need to use the earlier shtar in order to exercise the lien against an earlier sale, so by all means use it. I'm so sorry that I can't give you more because there's no way for me to add. If you see that you can collect from the... Therefore, it's that very same reasoning, the same way that you understand that she doesn't get 500. Hainu taima de lo gavya, that's why she can't have a dual collection. Because, mina lo kasav lo sifit lach mi'amatayim. Since he doesn't say over here, this lashon, and he's saying I'm adding an additional 100 to the 300, instead he writes now a completely different time slot for the entire 300, and not as an addition for the first document, but rather as an option that she can take instead of the first document, if she therefore uses it, that means a chuli achat to the shibud ekama. She's being mochelet on the original document, shibud, and she's taking only this one. So this has nothing to do with the case of Rav Huna. Because in a normal case, when you would be going along and writing out miktuva, and at that point you give it tosefet ktuva, the language of a standard tosefet in miktuva itself is, v'yosifid la almad token rabbonan kach v'kach. I have added above and beyond the original chiyuv of miktuva by X amount. That's the tosefet. So therefore, Rav Huna said, okay, so over there you have the original amount. That goes according to the shibud that was at the time of the erison. Then you can go ahead, collect the rest from the additional shibud, which is a whole new shibud on the addition. It has nothing to do with the case where you provide a shtar with a dual option. So she now has two shtars, so she could collect either two earlier or three later.